This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Reminder, following us, Grey Cup Saturday, live from Calgary ahead of tomorrow night's Grey Cup, 107th Grey Cup, a game you can hear exclusively on TSN Radio 1290.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Dave Minuka and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend from The Athletic, Aaron Portsline. Aaron, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Aaron. Obviously, brought you on to talk about the Blue Jackets, the first meeting of the season between the Jets and the Jackets. And, of course, the Blue Jackets, a team that went through a certain churn on their roster this offseason. And I was listening to John Tortorella earlier this week sort of talk about the Blue Jackets and their quest to find an identity. They're 9-8-4 so far in their first 21 games. Are you beginning to see this team that had so much roster churn find that identity that Tortorella was talking about earlier this week?
Well, I mean, I think there are certain signs that it's coming. I mean, when I think of this team's identity, I think of Nick Foligno. I think of Cam Atkinson. I think of Josh Anderson. I think of these players who you think you know coming into the season. In other words, there's so much uncertainty about this club. What's it going to look like in goal after Sergei Bobrovsky? What can the young kids, the rookies coming into the lineup, the Texiers, Bemstrom, what can those guys do along with the veterans to sort of help bridge the gap or replace the offense that left with Panarin, with Duchesne, with Dzingel? And the strange thing about this club is the goaltending has been most nights pretty good. I think Korpisalo has answered the bell more often than not. The kids, Bemstrom, Texier, they're starting to look like they're figuring it out. What's really hampered this club is the things that you thought you knew you could count on, and it's not been there. Cam Atkinson just scored the other night his fourth goal. This is a 40-goal scorer on pace for like 15. Nick Foligno has one goal. Josh Anderson, who at times looks like he can do whatever the hell he wants on a sheet of ice, has one goal, 2 points in 17 games. Like, if you would have told me at the start that those guys right now would have six goals after 21 games, you'd say, oh boy, this looks like a lottery team. And yet they've sort of kept themselves in the hunt by getting pretty positive answers to the biggest questions they had at the start.
Aaron, you reported about 10 minutes ago that not only is Elvis in the building, but Elvis Merlikens is going to make the start for the Blue Jackets. And we reported right before we had you on that Lauren Brossoit is going to be in net for the Jets. So you mentioned that you think the goaltending's actually been pretty good. And we obviously know that, you know, Sergei Bobrovsky has been the man there for so long. And we knew that it was Jonas Korpisalo's time to take over that number one role. So can you just expand on why you think it's been pretty good? Because if you were someone who hadn't watched the Blue Jackets that much, and I'm one of those people, you'd look at their numbers and you'd say those numbers aren't very good.
Yeah, well, I think this is weird. You can't just take a game and throw that out and say that didn't happen because it's part of the body of work. But Elvis Merzlikens, who's starting tonight, if you look at his, that kid had the absolute nightmare debut. I think it was almost, we don't obviously cheer or root for these guys for or against them, but you had to feel badly for him in his debut against Pittsburgh. Gives up 7 goals, 5 in the second period. And this kid's waited for years to get to the NHL, and that is his arrival in the NHL. Since then, he has a .919 save percentage. I think of their 21 games, there's probably been 2 games tops. That's one of them where you'd say this was a goaltender loss. The biggest thing that has snake bitten this team has been their inability to finish on chances offensively, but their absolute brain cramp breakdowns. They've allowed 5 shorthanded goals. They've allowed 15 shorthanded breakaways this year in 21 games where it's mind-numbing the breakdowns that they've had and how they've hung those guys out to dry some nights. I'm blessed to work with Allison Lucan, who sees games beyond the save percentage and looks at this team's how well those goaltenders have fared against the difficulty of shot. And they've actually fared pretty darn well. So many times it's the kind of shots you're seeing, not just the volume of them. The volume has been, I think, reasonable. There's been way too many rich scoring opportunities the other way. Those guys have kind of held their own. They haven't stolen any games, many games anyways, but they've kept them in there on the most part for most evenings.
You know, Aaron, a guy who's very familiar to folks here in Winnipeg from 1980 to 1988 was Paul McLean, his familiar mustache scoring goals, along with Dale Hawerchuk. He hasn't been an assistant coach since the 2016-17 season with Anaheim, but he just recently obviously was hired by the Columbus Blue Jackets. So what is the rationale behind this kind of early season hiring?
I think the rationale comes down to this: save the power play, please. This has been a sore subject in Columbus for almost 3 years now. I think it's gotten to the point where it's almost an outsized level of attraction for fans, where it's the thing they seize on every night, and you can just feel the building getting tense. When instead of cheering when they say Blue Jackets on the power play, the crowd almost goes, "Oh God, like, oh, how is this going to fall to pieces? Is it going to be a shorthanded goal? Is it going to be three shorthanded breakaways on the same power play?" That's happened this year. I mean, it has become such an issue here. And depending upon who you talk to, John Tortorella says that Brad Larsen came to him and said, "We need to remedy this." Jarmo Kekalainen said he and John Tortorella put together a list of people who could help their power play with the desire to bring another coach in. I think also Brad Larsen is seen by many as a guy who has a coaching future in the NHL. And so he steps away from the power play. I'm not exactly sure what his specific duties are going to be. Still an integral part of this coaching staff, still behind the bench, but they need Paul McLean to come in here and give them a different voice, a different perspective. It's probably going to be the same cast of characters on the power play. There's no reason that this power play should be not just among the worst in the league, but just brutally inept. And it's gotten better the last couple of weeks. John Tortorella took it over, but I think they felt like they needed a new voice, and Paul McLean's the guy.
Aaron Portsline is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for The Athletic, the Blue Jackets, and the Jets tonight at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. Aaron, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois was drafted, you know, top three back a couple of years ago. You know, this is his third full season with the Blue Jackets. You know, he leads the team in points. What's it going to take for him to get the recognition as one of the best young centermen in the NHL?
Well, I think he's gotten, I think people around the league recognize that. I mean, I think it's harder for, and Winnipeg may experience this as well, it's harder for a player in certain markets, smaller markets, to get attention. And sometimes the hardest thing is to just get that initial recognition from people that you deserve to be in the argument, and then you stick in the argument forever. I think of Seth Jones and the Norris Trophy, where you're thinking 2 or 3 years before he was mentioned he became a finalist, you're like, this guy should be getting some consideration. Like, he's that good. It's that first hurdle that's the hardest. And then, like, Seth Jones, I didn't think was as good last year as he was the year before, but he's still mentioned always as a Norris Trophy finalist, which is fine, but it's that first hurdle to get up and over. And I think Dubois is doing that. I mean, he has been in second or third tier here behind Panarin and Atkinson. The thing that really stands out for me this year is he spent the summer working on his puck protection and puck handling skills, knowing that he was going to have the puck more because Panarin's not going to be on his line. Panarin was a winger, but played the part of center in the sense of carrying the puck all the time. Dubois is an absolute battering ram now with the puck, loves to take guys on physically, has drawn a ton of penalties, and has scored some big goals for this team. And you're getting a broader sense, too, where they've paired him with Sonny Milano and Emil Bemstrom, which is a strange line, and I don't know if they can use it here tonight because they need Dubois against the best lines to defend, and I don't think they trust those two wingers against the best lines. So I'll be curious to see what they do with that. But Dubois has told those two guys, I want you to take offensive chances, and I'm going to cover your back defensively. That's my job. He's now coaching his line mates. He's now treating his lines as his line, whereas in previous season, he was on Artemi Panarin's line.
Aaron, I wanted to ask you about Josh Anderson. You mentioned Josh Anderson at the top of the interview, and he's a player that I've always admired, and he's coming off of the career year, 27 goals. I think he had 47 points, and I know that he had the injury at the beginning of the year. I think he missed 5, 6, 7 games, and, you know, he's really struggling. I mean, that's, you know, Captain Obvious speaking there, but he's only got the 1 goal, 1 assist on the season, and I think he's now in the bottom six playing with Alex Wenberg, if I'm not mistaken. But is this injury just kind of nagging and hampering his ability to get his season going, or what's going on there? Because I think a lot of people thought that, you know, he was going to follow up last year's season with a very similar offensive type of year.
Yeah, and it's a shame for him so far. This is a contract year. So certainly at this point, he's not bringing his best argument to the table. He suffered a shoulder injury last year in the playoffs against Boston, and his play dropped considerably from there. This is a guy, if you've seen him play, as you guys have, He uses his shoulders. He's the guy that plays with shoulders a lot. He's a power forward. He's not had that this year to the point where you have to think there's something not quite right with him. He mentioned in training camp that the shoulder that he was told would heal over the summer still felt a little bit weird, and then he missed 5 games with an upper body. So we're putting 2 and 2 together here. But since he's come back, he's had a couple of games where he's thrown his body around to the point where you say, okay, he doesn't have a shoulder problem, but he just hasn't been involved like he has. And it shouldn't be because of the players that left, because he wasn't skating with either of those guys, Panarin or Duchesne. He's been his own guy. That's the guy that creates his own offense with his size and his speed. I'm not sure what's going on with him. He insists that he's not injured. John Tortorella has said that he's fine. I'm told those two had a heart-to-heart before the game in Montreal, and I think he's been better since then. But this game tonight, Winnipeg is a Josh Anderson type of game. This is the kind of game he should thrive in against a bigger, more physical club. So I'll be curious to see what he's able to bring to the table tonight.
You know, Aaron, it's been a few years since the Cleveland Monsters were in the Central Division with the Manitoba Moose, so we obviously don't see that club, the farm club, as much as we used to. But are there any guys that are kind of knocking at the door, guys you're expecting to make that jump this season from the AHL?
Well, the one guy that's been a pleasant surprise, and I don't know if he can make the jump because they've got 8D here in Columbus, but Andrew Peak, a draft pick for them out of Notre Dame a few years ago, has been really, really strong for them this season. And it looks like a bona fide NHL prospect. They've got a forward, Jakob Lilja, who they signed out of Sweden, making the jump this year, who was at times okay in Columbus, has gone back down to play in Cleveland and is stuck there. Marco Dano, you all would remember him. Mm-hmm. He is still around. He's with the club in Cleveland. The one name that's really curious to me is a guy that 3 years ago, Gabriel Carlson, came up late in the season and was thrust into the playoffs. And this is a big kid, 6'5", 200 pounds, huge wingspan. And since then, his game has just not been anywhere where it needs to be. And so he's not even mentioned as much of a prospect anymore, but he's still floating around in Cleveland as a guy that if he gets it back together again, you could see rise up. I still think most of their top prospects are young guys in Europe. Marchenko in Russia and a goaltender, Tarasov, also, who's now playing in Finland. Those are probably the two top prospects.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for TheAthletic.com. Aaron, appreciate your time and insight as always. Enjoy tonight's contest between the Jets and the Jackets.
Yeah, well, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. I always appreciate it.
Take care, Aaron. Thanks again. When we come back, we give our preview of tonight's game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets and your home of the 107th Grey Cup. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
But I just think that's how it falls into place. If you just play the right way. And I think we took a step in the right direction towards an identity. We don't have an identity. I told them, we're a boring hockey team. That's 500. And we have no identity. And we have to recreate our identity. I thought we took a step in the right direction. A step.
That's Columbus Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella talking about his team after a victory earlier this week. They've won three in a row. They're in town tonight, of course, to play the Winnipeg Jets at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Just keep it tuned to the station all day long. Grey Cup Saturday follows us, and then, of course, we have all of your pregame show and your, you know, the broadcast of the game and the postgame show. Just keep it locked here on TSN Radio 1290 all day long. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction for all your real estate needs. Come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Drew, I'm very curious to know what Frank has cooking up for that Grey Cup, because we know that it's going to be delicious. It's going to involve lots of great meat, pizza. I should just go to his house.
Yeah, he has a restraining order against you, but aside from that, if you want to violate it.
That's not true.
You sure?
It's an open invite.
It's an open invite? Are you sure? You to his house? That. To his house? Where his family is? You don't have an open invite to my house.
And
see you on a weekly basis. Anyways.
You haven't had me over in a while. Why don't you have me over for the Grey Cup? I know that you've probably got a lasagna cooking in the oven right now.
No, we actually have a 22-pound turkey in the oven, heading in the oven for tomorrow.
Not a turducken?
Not a turducken, but a turkey, because it's our combination Thanksgiving Grey Cup party tomorrow evening. Sorry about the lack of invite, but, you know.
Stuffing?
Oh, there'll be stuffing. Mac and cheese.
This is riveting.
Cranberry sauce?
Oh, you bet it. It's the whole nine yards. It's the whole
biscuits.
Oh, there's biscuits.
Laura makes a good biscuit.
Yes, she's from Kentucky. She knows how to make a biscuit. Jets and the Blue Jackets tonight. I don't know if any of the players.
By the way, Dave has walked out of the studio because we're talking about all this food.
So this is an opportunity for the Jets, who have not played well on home ice. They've been struggling on home ice generally this season. They've been better on the road. This is an opportunity where they come off a good road trip. They play a team in the Blue Jackets that has certainly been scuffling all season long.
Yep.
This is one of those opportunities where the Jets should be able to impose their will, for lack of a better phrase, on an opponent.
Well, sure. But, I mean, you look at some of the games against teams that are clearly not as talented as the Jets. The LA Kings and the New Jersey Devils come to mind. Mm-hmm. And those were both losses for the Jets,
That's
right?
That's what I'm saying. This is.
Yes. I mean, the Jets on paper are a better team than the Blue Jackets. But, you know, we just had Aaron Portsline on, and he was talking about, you know, the goaltending hasn't been the issue. I mean, both goalies have been better, Jonas Korpisalo and Elvis Brzlickens, who's getting the start tonight. But when you talk about, you know, the guys that they expect to take a step up, some of the young players, guys like Alex Texier, who you remember scored a couple of goals in the first round of last year's playoffs, a guy like Josh Anderson scored 27 last year. He's only got one. And yes, he is dealing with an injury, even though maybe they don't want to admit it. But, you know, there are other players that aren't having great years. Alex Wenberg's not having a great year. Seth Jones, again, I think Seth Jones, not only is he maybe a top five defenseman, you could argue he's maybe the best defenseman in the league when he's at his peak. So it's not like the Blue Jackets don't have talented players and they don't have some skill in net on the back end. I mean, we know, I mean, Zach Werenski, I think he's second on the team in scoring as well. So, I mean, this Blue Jackets team isn't a pushover. But yes, the Jets should be able to take advantage of a team right now that is, even though they've won three games in a row, they're not the best defensive team. I think they have the last ranked penalty kill. I know they're very low on the penalty kill. They give up a lot of goals, and they don't score a lot of goals. They don't have a very good power play either. I mean, everything about the Blue Jackets has almost been turned on its head, right? And we knew they weren't going to be as good as last year, or at the very least, Dave, they weren't going to be as talented mm-hmm. as they were last year when you lose guys like, you know, Artemi Panarin and Matt Duchene, DeZingle. I mean,
they've scored 55 goals this year, which is 30th in the NHL.
So it's unbelievable.
Well, I mean, you lose Panarin, Duchesne, Dzingel. I mean, you know, Bobrovsky obviously not scoring.
Yeah, but you've still got Drew, Pierre-Luc Dubois, yeah. Cam Atkinson.
Well, you heard from Aaron. Atkinson's only got, what, 4 goals on the year so far? I mean, that's not enough. Wennberg has not turned out to be, you know, the player that the Blue Jackets thought he was going to be when they drafted him, you know, in the first round. Gustav Nyquist, he's got 3 goals since they acquired him as a free agent.
He's a 4-time 20-goal guy.
Right.
So, I mean, you expected a guy like Gustav Nyquist to have some goals. What I'm saying is, I don't necessarily think that the Blue Jackets are as bad as their record indicates.
My point from the Jets' perspective is this is a team that's been playing good hockey as of late.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, that good hockey has been on the road. They're 8-4 on the road. They're 5-5-1 at home.
Right.
This used to be a team that was. You know, how long was that winning streak on home ice a couple years ago?
14 games.
Didn't they have 30 wins 2 years ago?
Like on home ice, something like that. They had the most significant home ice advantages in the entire NHL. Yeah. And that's gone away.
Well, it can be a little bit of a mausoleum in there.
We're only talking about 11 games, too. I mean, they can turn this around.
I know, but it should start tonight. You've played well on this road trip. You've played well in the month of November. You're only home for one night, and you have the skills competition on Monday, mm-hmm. and then you're out on the road for, you know, going out west for, you know, over the U.S. Thanksgiving and everything else. If you want to start getting those good vibes in your home barn, this is when it starts. It starts tonight against an opponent that you think in your room you are better than.
Don't you think you're better than any team you play, though? Didn't they think they were better than Tampa? Like, they beat Tampa. Like,
I don't know when you're going up against the Islanders, if anybody's thinking that right now.
Well, the Islanders just don't lose in regulation.
I know what you're saying, though, Drew. I mean,
they need to start creating a home ice advantage.
They want to win. The Jets want to win every game.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
But especially, I think it's an Eastern Conference team that you don't see a lot. It's also a team that you look at and you say, well,
it's your first Saturday night home game of the year. It's Grey Cup weekend. The Bombers are obviously in the Grey Cup tomorrow night. You want to get those good vibes continuing that you've had so far this month.
Mm-hmm. It's like you said, because they haven't been as good at home. But I don't necessarily know that they want to win the game more because it's against a team that isn't in a playoff spot. But
they obviously want to win the game, each game, as much as possible. But they have to look at this as an opportunity to get keep the good vibes going, which is something they haven't been able to necessarily do on home ice.
You also don't want to get into a situation where you're on a losing streak, right? Well, even though ended up losing, it would only be 2 games. Yeah, you want to get back in the win column. You obviously didn't like the result in Dallas.
Your next 4 games. So tonight against the Blue Jackets team that's below you in the standings. You have Wednesday in San Jose against the team that's below you in the standings. You have Friday in Anaheim against the team that's below you in the standings. And then you have Saturday in Los Angeles against the team that's below you in the standings. The Jets have to look at this part of their schedule, the next 4 games, and say these are very winnable games. To go along with the wins they had while they were on the road, this is their opportunity to put more points in the bank, and it's good. The schedule's going to get harder. It doesn't all, there's going to be more divisional games, so take care of business right now in these, non-divisional games, some of them in conference next week, of course, but this is an opportunity where it starts tonight to keep those good vibes going from my perspective.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think Paul Maurice called this on the road. He said this was a litmus test for his organization, and he talked about the need for, obviously to keep this thing rolling. And to your point, Drew, they've got the good vibes. They've got the good feelings in the room. You've won 3 of your last 4. You've only got 2 regulation losses in November. So, can you get it turned around at home? We'll see what the crowd's like. I mean, that does play a little bit of a factor. The crowd, to my mind, to my ear,
Get the Jets playing right. The crowd will be there.
Oh, no, I agree. I think they're both kind of tied in together. I just think like it's you want that atmosphere, and it's just kind of been silent. Now, I think that's on the team because you got to get the fans into it, but we'll see what happens tonight with, like you said, their first Saturday night game.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll discuss the Maple Leafs' decision to fire Mike Babcock and hire Sheldon Keefe. We're live. It's Saturday morning. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
I mean, he would tell Lou what he thinks, and then Lou would do what he thinks.
Right.
And Mike would be fine with that. I don't, that level of respect has to be earned, and I don't think that Mike Babcock would have thought that Kyle Dubas earned it at that point, and it was probably frustrated by some of the decisions that were made, or at times the fact that maybe he didn't feel he was being heard. So I wouldn't say that it was terrible. I just don't think from a working perspective it was conducive to long-term success.
Right.
may not have been terrible, but it was pretty freaking bad by the end of his time in Toronto. That's Darren Dreger on TSN 1050 talking about the relationship between Mike Babcock and Kyle Dubas. We know, of course, that Dubas and Brendan Shanahan dismissed Babcock as head coach earlier this week, and that Sheldon Keefe is now the new head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I thought the most telling quote came from Babcock himself. He, I think, sent this to Pierre LeBrun. Quote, Larry Tannenbaum talked me into going to Toronto. I would have never gone until I met Larry. He's one of the finest people I've ever met. I had an absolute riot and met another friend for life in Lou Lamoriello. I thought we did an amazing job taking a franchise from where it was to where we had 100-point seasons. We set franchise records, got into the playoffs. I'm disappointed. We didn't have the start to the year we wanted, and that's on me. I want to thank the fans. I want to thank the media. I want to thank the city. It was spectacular. I loved every second of it. And I wish the new group nothing but success. Morgan Riley has been here the whole time. I can't thank him enough. And all the players I got an opportunity to coach. It's been fantastic, and I want them, and I wish them nothing but success. That's Mike Babcock. Who doesn't he mention in that quote?
Brendan Shanahan.
And?
Kyle Dubas.
And Kyle Dubas. So basically, I tweeted about it. He couldn't have given them, you know, the big old, you know, F you more than he did in that quote by not giving them, by not even referencing them at all, which tells you, I think, how poisonous the relationship was between Dubas and Shanahan and right. Babcock by the end of the, by the time that this, you know, dismissal happened earlier this week.
Yeah. And I don't want to just focus on that statement, Dave, but like, haven't Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner also been there the entire time Babcock's been there, right? Like, he says Morgan Riley has been there the entire time. I don't know why he singles out Morgan Riley.
I think he's saying Morgan Riley's the only guy I could trust. I think that's what it's saying, is that he's saying as a coach.
That's kind of what I was getting to. Yeah. Or Morgan Riley was really the only guy that liked Babcock, or, right?
Possibly.
Like,
I mean,
like, it, no, but like, let's be honest here. Like, we talked about it with Mike Zeisberger during the first segment. Pardon me, during the
first hour, the first, second hour, 10 o'clock.
Yeah, 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
We talked to him about this, and you asked him the question, like, after the Leafs lost to the Bruins last year, I mean, it was clearly Kyle Dubas had the opportunity to give the vote of confidence to Mike Babcock, and you didn't really want to read too much into it at the time, but It was a little cryptic.
Well, it took him two weeks to say that he's going to come back as my head coach.
Yeah, not only was it a little cryptic, or it wasn't exactly a vote of confidence, it took 2 weeks. You're right, Drew. So, I mean, there was a good chance, and we now know, you know, due to some of the really good reporting, that Kyle Dubas was considering bringing in Sheldon Keefe in the summer.
Should have.
Right?
Clearly, it looks like he should have.
Well, I mean, you look at the start to the season, and sure, the Leafs have dealt with injuries, right, to guys like Mitch Marner, John Tavares, Zach Hyman, but every team deals with injuries, so you can't blame injuries, and you can't blame the schedule, you can't blame anything like that. The reality is, the Leafs were well below the expectations. I mean, the Leafs, we expected to be, you know, fighting for the Atlantic Division crown, right, with teams like Boston, Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's obviously not doing as well either, but the point is, I mean, in that statement, clearly Mike Babcock is sour about being let go, but I don't think you're going to find many people in hockey, in the media, whatever, that were surprised that Babcock was fired. I mean, we had Jeff O'Neill on last week, and you were already starting to hear rumblings that Kyle Dubas was looking to make a move. And, you know, that those last few losses, mm-hmm. I mean,
well,
it kind of reminded me, if you go back to the Jets' third year, I think it was against Columbus. I
thought it was a game against Dallas. I know what you're talking about. It
might have been against Dallas, but before Claude Noel was fired.
It was a Saturday afternoon game, and the Jets lost, I think, 5-2 right. or something.
Yeah, and you got the feeling that a change was coming. And obviously,
it happened the next day.
Sure, and you obviously we didn't want Claude Noel to be fired. Everybody, you know,
nobody ever wants to see somebody lose their
job. And nobody wanted to see Babcock lose his job. But
Commodore did.
Your boy Mike Commodore.
Yeah, maybe call me. But I mean, a change needed to happen. I mean, they've won their first game. I wouldn't get too excited about the first game, but I do think that Sheldon Keefe is the right choice. And we all knew that it was going to come because, you know, that's Kyle Dubas's boy going back to the OHL, right, Dave? So, I mean, I don't feel sorry for Mike Babcock. I also don't think that, you know, his 4.5 years were a complete failure either. I mean, this is a team that was one game away from beating the Bruins 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. They were also a game away from beating the Capitals the year they won the Cup. Right. So it's not like, you know, this was a complete failure. This was a team that just couldn't get past that first round hump. So does does Babcock have to take the fault for the way the team played? Well, yeah, ultimately, because he was stubborn and he was so insistent on playing the shutdown brand of hockey that stifled any creativity.
It was definitely an old school mentality versus a new school mentality, and Dubas wanted the new school, and you saw it by the way he went out and got players who are just skill, whereas, you know, Mike Babcock preferred guys who, you know, he wanted a mix of character guys on the roster as well. So, I mean, you had two...
He basically wanted a team of Leo Komarovs.
Yeah, you had two differing philosophies, and it got to the point where both sides were dug in, and neither side was willing to play nicely in the sandbox with the other side. And ultimately, when that happens, what happens? You know, the team struggles, so the coach loses that battle. The general manager always, you know, holds the upper hand. And now Dubas has made his move, and he's got his guy, and we'll see if it turns the Maple Leafs around. But I mean, it just seems as though Mike Babcock's message and his time in Toronto, you know, certainly wasn't resonating in the dressing room anymore, Dave.
Well, and I really think, to your point that you just hit on, Drew, the fact is that he was not his guy. I mean, he wasn't his hire. He wasn't the Babcock backer. And mm-hmm. I think that goes a long way, you know. I mean, and you know, Mike Babcock survived. He's got a pretty legendary coaching pedigree. Of course, I would suspect a lot of that has to do with some very good teams in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, coaching Team Canada. I mean, I'm pretty sure some of us...
You're talking about Datsyuk, Zetterberg, Lidstrom.
They'll make any coach look pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he's had some good teams, and he's done a lot of things, a lot of good things for Hockey Canada, but... At the end of the day, this is clearly not his guy, and I don't remember when it was we were doing a coaching segment. We were talking about this situation in Toronto. Obviously, Mike Babcock still had his job, and I remember saying, like, well, and again, this is not like some crazy insightful thing, because the reality is everybody knew it. Sheldon Keefe is the guy who's waiting in the wings, mm-hmm, and we knew that Sheldon Keefe was going to be the guy in Toronto. It was only a matter of time. I mean, it's got to kind of, from Mike Babcock's perspective, it's got to suck, because knowing that guillotine is kind of hanging over your neck, knowing that the guy is, you know, right there. And again, it's interesting, because we look at the relationship that Paul Maurice, for example, has with Pascal Vincent, who obviously was an assistant coach with him before he took over and became the head coach of the Manitoba Moose. But you have a very good relationship, not always, but a lot of times you need to have, especially when you're in the same city, you have that relationship with your the head coach in your AHL organization.
You want it to be copacetic between the NHL and the AHL head coach.
Yeah, and it's not only copacetic, but you need to know that you're getting the best from these guys, and you need to know that, you know, everybody's on the same page.
Mm.
I have no reason to believe they weren't, but I don't know that based on what we're hearing, especially if I'm Mike Babcock, knowing that your replacement is just down, you know, in downtown Toronto.
Yeah, he's over at the PNE or whatever.
So I don't know how jovial their relationship was, how cordial it was. Anyway, and again, like I said, I don't know if it was bad, I don't know if it was good, but I'm just saying, like, to me, that must have been a tough situation as a head coach, knowing that your replacement is just down the way within the same organization. So you have to get this guy's insight, but at the same time, you have to know whatever you're telling him, because there's a certain coaching brotherhood, you know, like, even if the coach and the general manager are, you know,
at loggerheads.
Thick like thieves, I'm saying. Even if you have that great relationship. Mm. At the end of the day, coaches, it's like players. Players are always going to be different when a coach is in the room. Coaches are always going to be slightly different when a general manager, I'm sure they have good relationships, but they're more at ease when there's other coaches in the room.
Sure.
So like, again, going to the Maurice and Vincent relationship, you see that tie. I'm just wondering, if I'm Mike Babcock and I'm talking to Sheldon Keefe, how much of that is being relayed?
How much can you trust the guy you're supposed to be in a relationship with?
I'm just saying that it's a fairly untenable situation, which has now been resolved, obviously. Toronto is going to be paying some serious money for the next few years.
Yeah, but who cares? I mean, they have all the money in the world.
It doesn't hurt them.
Yeah.
It's not like it's going against their cap. They don't care. It's just money for them, and they print it in Toronto. So it's not
the coins are made in Winnipeg.
Correct. That's a very good point by Ezzy.
Nice, good job on the mint reference there, Ezzy. Can the Leafs turn this around? So right now the Leafs
are... I think they can.
I mean, they're only 2 points out of a playoff spot, but they've played way more games than...
Two more games.
They played more games. So everybody has games in hand on them. The Lightning, in particular, have 5 games in hand on the Leafs, and they're only...
I still don't know how that's possible. I realize that the Lightning went to Sweden, and played in the, you know, the two games against Buffalo. But,
yeah, but even Buffalo's played 22 games.
The fact
games
that this early in the season, there's a team that's played five less games.
Well, apparently the schedule maker got called to the carpet at the NHL general manager's meetings to explain himself because the schedule is so bizarre and so out of whack.
Yeah, good luck trying to understand that schedule.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who can prepare that
I
schedule.
I have to tell you, that job must be...
thankless.
No, but no, forget about thankless. It is thankless. But, like, you know, when you have to factor in multiple... like concerts and venues used, like, you know, like the hockey East,
well,
and basketball
Bank, and here
and
in Winnipeg,
you've got NHL and AHL, San Jose, you've got NHL and AHL, you know, so many times, like multi-use buildings. And again, like I said,
look at the Kings. The Kings have the Clippers.
Yeah.
They have the Lakers. They have the Kings and they have, you know, every concert in the world probably right. at the same time.
There's no Taylor Swift banners.
Right, they got rid of the Taylor Swift banner.
Andrew, just
the bad
to,
luck Taylor Swift banner.
Right, and you know, just to quickly wrap up the segment here, boys. I know that you know the Leafs have some work to do, and you know it remains to be seen. I mean, they've obviously are behind the eight ball right now, but you look at their next four games. They've got Colorado tonight. We talked about that earlier, but two of their next four games, they've got Buffalo, who are struggling. They've got Detroit following the second game against Buffalo. They've got Philadelphia, and then they play Colorado again. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously the two games against Colorado are going to be tough, even though they don't have Rantanen and Landeskog. Colorado is a really good team. But when you're talking about, you know, the two games against Buffalo, Detroit, Philly, you're not exactly playing, you know, the best teams here. So the Leafs, if the Leafs are going to turn around and, you know, ultimately get back into the playoff conversation, this next block of five or six games is huge.
There are two teams in the Western Conference who are struggling. They both won their divisions last year. That's the Nashville Predators and the Calgary Flames. Predators have lost six in a row. The Flames are winless in their last six. We talk about their struggles and which team we think is in trouble and which one we think is going to get out of their doldrums. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets and your home of the 107th Grey Cup, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bill Peters has his hands full in trying to find some solutions for this team that is really in serious trouble.
Where's he going? Where's he going?
We got to start scoring the first goal in the game.
Robert Thomas in there, scoring. They score! Sundquist into a wide open net.
It's exhausting and it's not working.
Shot! Score!
Things are not going well in Calgary and in Music City with the Predators and the Flames, respectively. Both these teams, both division winners last year, both teams struggling. Flames losers of five in a row, Predators losers of four in a row. All those losses coming on home ice in Nashville. These are two teams that were division winners last year. And they just can't get things going so far this season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we are live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. He's been in town since Thursday. He's been playing to sold out crowds. His shows tonight are all sold out. You know the name Tom Green at Rumors this weekend. Unfortunately, or fortunately as the case may be, no tickets available. So don't get caught without tickets for Chris Griffin next weekend. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, the Flames and the Predators, both teams struggling. Both teams had Stanley Cup aspirations. Which team?
Both division winners last year.
Both division winners last year. Which team of the two is more concerning from your perspective?
Yeah, I'm going to say Calgary.
I would agree.
And by the way, the fact that their guys are three division winners that are currently out of a playoff spot, the other one obviously being Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that to me is one of the biggest storylines early on this season, right? Like, who saw that coming?
Tampa Bay, to me, is a function of having played so few games. I mean, Tampa Bay, their numbers, they're 10-7-2. They still have a positive goal differential.
Sure, but even though I mean, 10-7-2, that's 500, right?
Yeah, it's not great.
It's interesting, but it's almost, that's the function of what Brian Engblom said to us last week, which is that idea that they're pacing themselves. And that's what I would think of Tampa Bay.
I also think Tampa Bay, just for the record, I do think Tampa Bay is going to make the playoffs.
Yeah,
I think
they have just too much skill. I'm worried about Calgary.
No, I'm worried about Calgary. And, you know, it's not just because Johnny Hockey is struggling. I mean, going into the season, I mean, I don't want to say I told you so, but I did pick Calgary to miss the playoffs. You can check your little spreadsheet there, Drew.
I remember.
I'm going to check my spreadsheet to confirm that, but
And again, I always want Canadian teams to make the playoffs. So I'm not saying I told you so, and I'm not happy that Calgary is struggling. But the main reasons why I didn't think Calgary was going to be a playoff team this year is because I didn't think they were going to get enough depth scoring, and I didn't think the goaltending was going to be good enough. And
both areas is where they're lacking.
Right? And again, like, you know, David Rittich, I think, is a good goalie. I don't think he's, you know, a top end goalie.
Not by a
And I think Mike Smith is a better goalie than Cam Talbot. So when you talk about, you know, the goaltending, that hasn't gotten better, and that was an issue last year. And, you know, players like Elias Lindholm, who had career years, they're obviously not following that up this year. So obviously, yeah, Monahan, Gaudreau, Tkachuk. I mean, Tkachuk's leading the team in scoring unless something's changed, but those guys have to be better. The top guys have to be better, but you also have to get, you know, contributions from guys like Andrew Mangiapane. Like Michael Backlund's not having a good year. Michael Backlund was really solid last year, right, Dave? So usually when a team isn't doing well, you can go up and down the roster and you can say, well, this guy's not having as good of a year as last year.
Right.
This guy's not having as good of a year as last year. But really across the board, I mean, you know, pick really any player. I mean, there isn't anybody on this team who's having or on pace for a career year. So I'm a little bit concerned. You know, I did a little schedule analysis here, and because we're talking about Calgary and Nashville, and Calgary by far has the easier schedule coming up, you know, in the next 6 to 10 games. You know, they're playing Philadelphia this afternoon, or actually right now.
Yeah, it starts in 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah,
11:30
right,
Central Time.
Right. So, I mean, morning here, but, you know, obviously, you know, afternoon in Philly, but you've got Pittsburgh coming up, Buffalo, Ottawa, Buffalo again, LA Kings, and then it starts to get a little hard with Colorado and Arizona on the road back to back. Both those teams are playing well right now, and then you've got Toronto. So, but in the next 5 to 6 games, the Flames have a pretty easy schedule, whereas Nashville, they've got St. Louis back-to-back, then you've got Vegas, Carolina, Florida, Tampa Bay, then it gets a little easier with New Jersey and San Jose. But if you're looking at, you know, just the next, you know, 6 or 7 games, Calgary has the easier schedule. But, you know, Calgary, I think you didn't expect them to have this much trouble scoring goals. That's the big issue there. Like, I expected Mark Giordano his numbers to come down offensively a little bit. He just isn't a guy that you expect to have 70 points every year.
Mm-hmm.
But when guys like
27th in goals for with 60 goals scored so far this season.
Right. And they were fourth or fifth in the league last year? Like they were at the top of the league.
Firepower.
Right? So that's the biggest concern to me, because you knew that, Dave, they weren't going to have the best goalies in the world. Like, nobody expected David Rittich to be putting up a .930 save percentage and be a top five goalie. But it's the goal scoring that has really been a surprise. And it's some of the top players that are having trouble putting the puck in the net.
Well, I mean, as you hit it on the head, I mean, you got the team who's has allowed the third most goals in the NHL. Detroit's number one. San Jose's number two. Calgary's number three. So that right then and there is like, okay, well, you know, you're allowing a lot of goals. It's defensively, obviously, it's an indication you ain't very good right now.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, sometimes, you know, we see teams outscore their problems.
Yeah.
They ain't doing that either.
Mm-hmm.
As you just touched on, Drew, 62 goals for the season. So if you're the Calgary Flames and you're looking at that and you're thinking, we've got a problem with goal scoring, we've got a problem with goaltending.
Yeah.
That's a recipe for disaster. Nashville, on the other hand, has 74 goals for, 74 goals against. So they're probably giving up more, especially with that defensive unit that we're used to seeing be such a juggernaut year after year. But they have the offensive ability.
I think this is a blip for the Predators.
Well, I mean, yeah, look, they've lost 4 in a row.
Yeah.
So a little bit, I mean, that's getting to almost to a concerning level. If you keep, and to Ezzie's point, it's not getting easier in the next little bit.
Fine.
You've got 4 games that are going to be really tough. Now, if you lose 3 of the next 4, 2 of the next 4. I mean, that's putting you pretty behind the 8-ball. Now, is it insurmountable? No, because they're a very good team. But at the same time, all these other teams are just adding points, right? Dallas is hot. Colorado, well, they haven't been that hot of late. St. Louis, 7-1-2 in the last 10. Winnipeg, 7-2-1.
Yeah.
So if these teams keep adding points, and we talked about the Jets schedule, you know, so if you've got teams that are continuing to add points to the bank, look, I'm not saying it's insurmountable.
Yeah.
But you know,
well, the reason why I have more faith in the Predators is that they started the year so well.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, I think, you know, the first couple weeks of the season, they were 7-1-1. Pekka Rinne had a ridiculous save percentage, ridiculous goals against. He was absolutely on fire.
How about those Buffalo Sabres, Drew?
Yeah, they're struggling. They're struggling as of late as well. Absolutely. That was my sort of sneaky surprise pick, and they started well, and they've been struggling since then. So no question you're right there, Dave.
There's lots of season left to be played, boys.
Yeah, but it's getting, for some teams, if you have not played well at all during the year, and I'm going to say the Flames have really, for the most part, not played well at all for any consistent stretch during the season, it does get late early. For a team like Nashville that played well and is now struggling, I think ultimately they're a better team than their current record is showing. I'm not so sure about the Flames with their goaltending and Johnny Gaudreau and his horrendous start to the season that they're going to be able to, you know, find their feet before it's too late, Dave.
The only thing I would add is that there seems to be more than, I think, a lot of years, a tremendous amount of parity.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, no, I know, but we talk about it every year. But, like, usually you see a little bit of falling off. You see teams with maybe, you know, 10 to 15 points at this point of the season. And really, you've got LA with the least amount of points in the Western Conference with 19. You know, Vegas is 26, and they're the second wild card right now. So, And LA has two games in hand on Vegas.
You're saying there's no teams that are just so woefully terrible like they were last year.
Well, yeah, it just seems like look, LA's, you know, reeled off. They've won a bunch. They've won their last game, but they had won a couple before that.
Even like Ottawa's won three in a row, you know?
Yeah,
like,
you know what I mean? So like right now, with the exception of Detroit, who sits there with 17, you know, it's not, I'm just saying that you haven't seen that huge gap.
There's no Tampa Bay this year.
That's right.
I mean, like, nobody expected, at least I didn't, and a lot of people didn't expect them to repeat 128 points, but I don't think anybody expected them to be a 500 team at this point, even though they've played. I agree, though, Drew.
You're right.
You have to factor in the games played, and we kind of agreed Tampa mm-hmm. Bay is probably going to turn it on, you know, pretty quickly, but I agree with you, Dave. I mean, it kind of reminds you, you know, a couple of years ago when Washington won the cup, right?
Yeah.
And Washington wasn't expected. I mean, last year, Tampa Bay going to the playoffs was obviously expected, you know, to go farther in the playoffs. But the year Washington won it, they didn't put up anywhere close to 128 points.
I remember, Holtby went in there struggling.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's just, look, if you can keep yourself into the fight, which is, I think, Drew's point with Nashville, and I think that that's probably what they're going to do, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be overly worried. I think Calgary's got, right now, a number of holes that they have to fill, and that ship seems to be sinking. Nashville's, you know, for the most part, it's pretty been okay. They just got to keep steering the ship in the right direction.
You know, just to wrap the segment up, because we got Josh Smith coming up of scouting the refs. Jim Neal said this a couple of weeks ago. It was either 2 weeks ago or three weeks ago.
He was on the show.
3 weeks ago, he said it's almost as hard to get into the playoffs now as it is to win the cup.
Yeah, so there's some truth. Just make it in, and then you can be a Stanley Cup contender. When we come back, Josh Smith from scoutingtherefs.com joins us. Talk about officiating. Talk about some of the decisions that linesmen have made. What is offside? It's a big theoretical, theological question. We'll ask Josh about it coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
To discuss the world of officiating and some decisions that have been questionable in the eyes of Winnipeg Jets fans, we're pleased to be joined by Josh Smith from ScoutingTheRefs.com. Josh, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. They're always keeping it interesting for us, and especially for the Jets lately, it seems.
Yeah, they're keeping it interesting is a nice way of putting it. It seems that offside can change on a play-by-play, game-by-game basis. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I guess, as it comes to offside rulings. You know, I assume you saw the replay. You've seen the replay from Thursday's Jets-Stars game where it looks to most, I think, independent observers that Jason Dickinson is offside and he does not have control. But the Jets challenged and the officials ruled that he did have control. From your perspective, was this the right call made by the linesman?
That was a surprising call. You know what? I'm gonna stop and just stick up for the linesman there. Call on the ice was good in real time. Once you start looking at the video review process and the coach's challenge, you know, then you're handing that off to the situation room, who's making the ultimate determination there. But in this case, you know, I thought for sure that was going to be considered offside. Just the possession and control thing is obviously the consideration. You can enter the zone ahead of the puck as long as you have both possession and control. And as we saw, you know, last week with the Bruins Coyle entering the zone with, you know, that kicking the puck up to his stick, and they ruled that that was not considered possession and control. I thought, you know, just as a case study, that that would result in this one being overturned as well. So, yeah, I was not expecting that to be ruled onside.
You know, Josh, you mentioned the Charlie Coyle play, and, you know, we just talked about the Jason Dickinson non-offside, and, you know, this past week there were the GM meetings in Toronto, of course, and we know that they were talking about, you know, the interpretation of offside. They were also talking about, you know, whether or not coaches can challenge, or sorry, officials talking to coaches about plays that can't be challenged. I guess first part of my question is, do you think that the interpretation of offside needs to be changed? And I'm talking about the Jared Bednar case, of course, which you covered on scoutingtherefs.com. But do you think that officials should be able to tell the coaches that they're not able to challenge a play?
You know, I think it depends. When you have the challenge issued, right, the coach has to tell them, I'm challenging the play for goaltender interference, I'm challenging for offside, or I'm challenging it for a missed stoppage. It's up to the coach to give that decision to the referees, and then that's relayed, and that's how the play is evaluated. So I really feel it's up to the bench boss to know that, hey, this situation, we can't challenge this one, we can challenge this one. You don't want to get in a spot where the referees are explaining the rules or explaining the eligible situations, because it can get pretty lengthy, it can get pretty involved, and I would expect that the onus is on the coaches and their coaching staff. You know, they have dedicated video coaches, but it's on them to really know whether or not a certain play was eligible to be challenged.
You know, Josh, on Monday, Washington Capitals forward Garnet Hathaway spat on the Ducks' Erik Gudbranson in an incident that everyone has probably seen by now. Hathaway received a match penalty on the play and was subsequently suspended three games by the NHL. In your opinion, was this situation handled correctly by the officials on the ice and the NHL Department of Player Safety?
I think it was. You know, I don't question anything in the process. Seeing him get tossed is the right, absolute right decision. It's such an overt, unsportsmanlike conduct. It's something you don't want to see in the game. It's a deliberate act. So, yeah, I think that was the right call by the on-ice officials. I also think it was right in suspending him for three games to send that message of, this is something that we don't want in our sport. We won't allow it. So I think those were correct. The problem that I get is when you start looking at the suspension length relative to plays that are dangerous to other players, like illegal checks to the head, where you get three games for spitting, but illegal checks to the head, maybe one or two games here and there. And I know that's more of a hockey play gone wrong sometimes, but I think that the precedent is, yeah, this is great for spitting, but maybe we should toughen up on some of the physical or dangerous suspensions as well.
Yeah, imagine what someone's going to get for a suspension if they lick somebody in the head. It could just be, you know, they might be banned from the game forever. Josh Smith.
Apparently it's a harsh conversation for licking.
Josh Smith from scoutingtherefs.com is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Josh, it was last Saturday night. It was a scary incident involving Matt Calvert, who takes a slap shot to the face and head area from Elias Pettersson. You know, he can't get up. The Canucks continue to maintain control, and the officials decide to let the play continue despite there being a player in obvious distress. Is there a need for a change to the rule book, or is there just a need for the officials in this instance to use better common sense?
You know, it's a tough spot, right? You want to make sure the guy's injured, but you can't expect the on-ice officials to be able to instantaneously determine whether or not it's a severe injury. Obviously, we see guys diving to draw penalties. We don't want somebody diving to draw a stoppage. And I'm not saying Calvert did. Obviously, he was seriously injured. I don't think anyone realized how bad it was until, you know, as play progressed and he remained down, and then we saw the blood later on. I don't think necessarily I'm expecting more from the on-ice officials. They have to make that judgment. I think where the opportunity is for the league to step in here. You know, we've seen it with goals where a team scores a goal, the officials on the ice miss it, they sound the horn from up above, and play stops. Maybe this is one of those situations where we look for Toronto or one of the off-ice guys who's watching the game to say, you know what, this is more serious than anyone on the ice realizes. We need to stop play, and they sound the horn. I think that's probably the best option for the league because, you know, I can't expect officials to make more medical judgments than they do, but I think you're in a position where you can take an off-ice guy and let him stop play if it's deemed to be, you know, more serious than the on-ice crew realizes.
Josh, do you think that the NHL and Stephen Wacom particularly handled that situation well? Because, you know, I'm sure that you saw a lot of the Avalanche players, specifically Eric Johnson, you know, Nathan MacKinnon, they were pretty upset. But do you think the response from the NHL, Stephen Wacom, was a good one?
I think Wacom's comments and then Bettman's comments as well is we're leaving it up to the officials. Obviously, in this situation, we would have preferred play to be stopped. But again, that's looking after the fact and understanding the severity of Calvert's injury. You know, it's easy in hindsight to say, yeah, it was a head injury and he was bleeding. We should have stopped play. But, you know, I think at that moment, and if you watch the guys on the ice, and, you know, we tried to do that with the video of breaking it down to try to see where the officials were focused. They're watching the play. They're watching all the guys that are out there. And, I think as play went on, you saw them glancing back. And I think, you know, if it were me and I hadn't stopped play, I'm starting to get concerned of like, boy, I should have stopped play, but maybe we can just get a whistle. And, you know, it starts to snowball that you're thinking to yourself, boy, I wish I had blown the whistle, but it's already too late and the goal's already scored. You know, I don't know what specifically you could have them handled differently other than to get some assistance in determining the severity of an injury.
Josh, this is the first year that coaches are able to challenge plays, missed stoppages in play without having without having to worry about whether they have a timeout, and that's something to me that has been really interesting to watch. How do you think it's going, you know, through the first, you know, 20 to 25 games of the year?
Well, I think it's interesting. It changes your strategy, right? Because you still have that timeout to use to take a break. You don't have to use a challenge in lieu of a timeout or to get yourself an extra timeout. But you also have that punishment of the penalty if you challenge. So as a result, you know, we see challenges down across the board, which is good. The league really wants challenges only to happen on those egregious plays. And I think it has proven that the penalty is more of a deterrent. So it changes the strategy a bit, but it has resulted in fewer challenges, which I think is a good thing. And as a result, we've seen more successful rate of challenges, which means teams aren't challenging frivolously. They're only challenging when they really think they have a shot at getting the goal overturned.
You know, Josh, for the remainder of the season, all NHL officials will wear a JG patch on their uniforms, paying tribute to the late Jim Gregory. Can you talk about Jim Gregory's involvement in officiating and the introduction of video review?
Sure. So he, you know, obviously had years as an executive and as a manager, but he was key in the hockey ops department in the league, where he spent many, many years working with officials, overseeing the officials, and introducing the video review process, you know, from its first confirmation of, you know, whether or not a goal was scored or you know, having them to see whether it was kicked in. And then we obviously see the evolution to where we are with coaches' challenges. So I think it was a smart move, and he had that foresight to see that this is where the league was going and that technology could help them get the call right. So, you know, a huge, huge impact that he's made.
Last question for you, Josh. It was tabled until the next general manager's meeting, you know, about the skate and the blue line, and maybe the blue line, instead of the skate having to be on the ice, it's more of a plane where you can hover it above the ice. Do you expect that to change at the next general manager's meetings, or do you think it's going to be the skate on the ice rule continuing?
I expect it to continue. I think introducing a skate in the air, you introduce greater hazard to players on the ice. You don't want guys putting an arm or a skate up in the air to try to stay onside. Obviously, having a blade off the ice is more dangerous. I also think it becomes tricky at lower levels. You know, when you look at the AHL, the ECHL, at those levels, to have that technology to make sure you're calling it consistently. So I think the league's hesitant to introduce an offside standard at their level that can't be maintained at the lower levels.
Josh Smith does great work at scoutingtherefs.com. We encourage you to check it out. Josh, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, thank you, and good luck to your voice today.
Yeah, thanks very much, Josh. Take care. When we come back, one final segment on Saturday morning, we'll talk about things we're thankful for as we approach U.S. Thanksgiving on Thursday, and we'll also give our Grey Cup predictions ahead of the 107th Grey Cup tomorrow evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets and your home of the 107th Grey Cup, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Remember, coming right up after us, Grey Cup Saturday, live from Calgary, and then tomorrow evening it's the 107th Grey Cup, live here on TSN Radio 1290. But of course, before that, you got a Jets contest tonight. The Jets and the Blue Jackets, shortly after 6 p.m. puck drop, will be live here on TSN Radio 1290. So just keep it locked and loaded, as the phrase goes, to us here on TSN Radio 1290. U.S. Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday.
Gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble. Exactly right.
How many football games are you going to watch?
Well, there's only three on Thursday, so I'm going to watch all three on Thursday.
I've been to a game at in Detroit. It was Lions and Patriots on U.S. Thanksgiving, and it was incredible.
Incredible in that the Patriots destroyed them, or
no? Actually,
the Lions were
in the game till the third quarter, okay. And then Tom Brady took over, and it was the Tom Brady show.
Yeah,
and they ended up beating them like 45-28.
Yeah,
but they still have Indomican Sue then.
Yeah, they had Sue, and they had not Indomican, but they had Sue, and they had
first name.
Yeah, no,
name.
I'm joking.
Okay,
and they had. Kid Rock did the halftime show.
Oh, well, there's really very little more patriotic than a Kid Rock halftime show on U.S. Thanksgiving.
And Dave is an American badass, so.
That is true.
What are you thankful for, Mr. Ginsburg, as it pertains to the NHL? This is your segment. You suggested some things you're thankful for as it pertains to the NHL. What are you thankful for?
Well, I got to start off with, being thankful that we get to watch Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl tear up the NHL right now. Like, I realize that maybe, a lot of people in Winnipeg or on the East Coast don't watch them as much because they're, on closer to the West Coast. Yeah, but
a little past their bedtime.
Yeah, but I mean, it's incredible. These guys are almost at 2 points per game. And, I was talking about this with someone in the office. I mean, right now, who do you give the Hart Trophy to? Like, to me, you have to split it up and give half of it to McDavid and half of it to Draisaitl. If anything, I would say, Draisaitl might be in the lead. And I realize that, last year was his breakout year with, 50 goals, 100 points and all that. But like, it's just a pleasure to watch these guys because, we know that goal scoring is up a little bit, but I mean, we haven't seen something like this where you have two guys, averaging, 1.8 points per game, whatever it is. So I'm just thankful that we're seeing, them put up this many, goals and assists. It's really fun to watch.
And this is, of course, where I remind you that I took Draisaitl in your hockey draft, which I'm currently winning by a sizable margin. Dave Minuk, what are you thankful for?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm thankful for what the Rangers did a couple days ago on Wednesday.
That was a great video.
It was awesome. And like a 10-year-old fan was in the crowd. He was being interviewed by the Rangers in-game team, and he was doing a name the movie contest, and he had to beat Adam Fox. And and he did, and so the prize was winning a jersey.
Yeah.
So the in-house guy for the Rangers is saying, well, who's going to deliver the jersey? Pretending like he didn't have it, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the kid's dad, who had just finished serving a 1-year term in Afghanistan, surprises the kid and like comes running down the stairs. And I don't care if you have kids or don't have kids. That's something that just gives you chills seeing the reaction. Kid starts crying.
That was
dad's
awesome.
Crying. Like
yeah.
That kind of stuff is amazing. You really do love to see the power that hockey. Outside of the actual games themselves can bring and that kind of moment, watching a dad and his son reunite was pretty awesome.
It was terrific. My only concern, what happens if he didn't beat Adam Fox in the game? Does he still get the jersey?
I suspect he was still.
Okay. I mean, cause that's, my thinking, a little concern there, but it was a fantastic video. If you haven't checked it out, it's all over the interwebs. Mr. Ginsburg, what else are you thankful for?
Yeah, I'm thankful that the Canucks are back in the playoff hunt. They're third in the Pacific right now. They've missed the playoffs the last 4 years. And even though I didn't necessarily think that they would be a playoff team and there's lots of hockey left to be played, I just think it's a good thing that you have a team that really hasn't had a lot of success. Obviously, they had a better year last year, but a couple of years ago, they were a bottom feeder in the Western Conference. And this year, it's just nice to see, the additions they made, guys like Michael Ferland, JT Miller, Tyler Myers, even though he's on the third pair right now, it doesn't matter. The moves that they've made have started to, bear fruit. Quinn Hughes, great rookies, having a great year. He's in the conversation for the Calder Trophy, even though I think Cale Makar's got that locked up. But, I mean, it's just nice that a Canadian team that struggled, because it wasn't too long ago the Jets were struggling. So I think it's just good to have, more Canadian teams in the playoff race.
Dave Minuk, give me something quickly, if you have one, and give me your prediction for the Grey Cup tomorrow.
Well, my last one will just be quick. And it's just that I like the fact that the NHL does this Hockey Fight Cancer Month in November. I think cancer is something that touches so many of us outside of hockey, and it's something that's real. Hockey sometimes allows you to have a bit of an escape. Tonight's Jackets Jets game, I believe, is their Hockey Fights
Cancer
game.
It is Hockey Fights Cancer.
So there'll be a lot of people who have suffered from or are suffering with cancer will be at the game, and they've had tickets donated. So I really enjoy that, and I think it's a real nice way to allow these cancer survivors to get a little bit of a break.
Wear your mauve if you're going to the game tonight. That's right. The mauve being the
Movember,
color for Hockey Fights
and
Cancer.
And Movember.
Great Cup predictions, quickly.
Yeah, we obviously have to go with the Bombers here, and it's been a long time. I was 8 years old, Drew, when they last won the Great Cup, so that would mean that I think you were 35 at the time. So, I mean, you got to go with the Bombers. I'm going to say Bombers end up winning by 13.
Alrighty, Ezzy with the bold prediction. Dave, you going to disagree with him?
I don't really care because I'm not a big football guy, but I'll you know, I'm hope for people who are in Winnipeg who are big fans that the Bombers win.
I just want that guy to be able to wear pants again. It's been it's been a long time since he's been able to wear pants. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guest Josh Smith. Big thank you to Aaron Portsline, Mike Zeisberger, and of course Scott Billick. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com, on tsn1290.ca, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, let us know your thoughts on the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.